Shalom liyudim, shalom b'nei noach, shalom goyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Yud Gimel b'menachem Av, Parashas v'Eschanan, Tavshinayim Vav, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 16 August 2016, webcasting from Israel, home of the Israelis, still uncomfortable in their Jewish skins. It took us truly years to understand them. The Zionists, in their heyday, advertised themselves as proud Jews who did not kowtow to Gentile oppressors, but they fought back. It was the age of the Sabras, the native-born children of the atheist Zionist pioneers, who as children were taught that the diaspora Jews went like sheep into the gas chambers, and they were therefore contemptible. They also made a face of disgust whenever they heard Yiddish, the language of those sheep who did not fight back. Of course, the unspoken accusation of the Sabra was that they could have, but they did not. Imagine, though, the young father and mother with, say, three children under the age of five, hearing a knock on the door at midnight, and it's five Nazi thugs. What are they supposed to do? They were not organized to raise and equip and coordinate an army to fight these stormtroopers. The demand by the Sabra was wholly ignorant of the circumstances. His contempt was baseless. A sign of his desire to cut himself off from those Jews. His self-regard as a proud Jew was basically dishonest. Such types insisted they were not Jews but Israelis, whose Zionism was not to rescue Jews but reform them, like reformed Jews, into something unrecognizable as Jews. These commonly hard-left Sabras claimed to be proud, the proud Jews, but that was not true. Search the speeches of Benjamin Netanyahu, and you will find frequent references to his pride in Israel as a country where we can now defend ourselves. For Bibi, being Israeli is above all being a Jew who fights back. As an aspiration, though, having an army, it's a common one among the peoples of the planet. Lots of nations have armed forces, so the desire to have an army, as the core of Zionism, is not intrinsically a Jewish desire, but a generally human one. And to this day, in their flight from Jewishness, Israelis remain oblivious to the old-fashioned maniacal hatred against us on display daily among our neighbors. It does not occur to Israelis to look upon the Arabs here as the goyim. That is a taboo word in secular Israel, which is a most distinguishing mark. This is the most unusual community of Jews in history for not using that term, which only means just alien, not belonging to our people. It's not an inherently bad word, on the contrary. And as a result, they do not look upon our neighbors as their grandparents looked upon, say, the semi-literate Ukrainian peasants in the vicinity, whose hatred for Jews was stoked daily in that culture. It does not occur to Israelis to see that our neighbors here are basically as sick in their heads about Jews as any Ukrainian peasant ever was, as any lunatic Nazi ever was. I even go further and say the Arabs here are worse than the Germans as a whole in the 1930s. You know, in the elections of 1932, Adolf Hitler did not win a majority of the votes, a plurality. Many Germans thought he was coarse. It was only due to the defective engineering of the German political system that led to his selection as Kanzler. In addition, if we set aside for the moment the monstrosity of mass murder, at German hands, the German people have also shown as a remarkable people whose contributions to society are many in the sciences, engineering, music. What is Western music without Bach and Sons, without Mozart, without Handel? There were Germans in the beginning who looked upon Hitler as a thug, and when it got really bad, there were those who fled the country and went into exile, like actress Marlene Dietrich and actor Conrad Veidt. But the Arabs, Hitler had his haters in Germany, however too few, but Arab society is across the board simply delusional with fantasies of Jewish devilry, as if little has changed there since the darkest days of medieval Christianity persecuting Jews. And the religious iconography of the medieval Christians portrays Jews as half-animal with fangs and claws dripping with blood, and those are political cartoons in the Arab countries to this day. And that kind of imagery is also on display in the conduct of the Fatah gang, you know, those moderate peace lovers, unlike those bad religious types in Hamas. This was the thinking of Rabin and Peres. That's why they met Oslo. The good secular Jew killers versus the bad religious Jew killers. This was the thinking of Rabin and Peres. BMW reported on Monday, as it does really every summer, on the summer camps that are run by Fatah and Hamas and others, where the reigning atmosphere in all of them is hatred of Jews for their evil treatment of Muslims. A few days ago, we learned, as part of the closing ceremony in a Fatah-run camp, you know, Mahmoud Abbas remains the head of Fatah, children acted out a skit showing, quote, the cruel attitude of the Zionist jailer towards our heroic prisoners. Some of the children play-acted at being these prisoners by kneeling, being blindfolded, and handcuffed, while other children played at being friends who shoot them dead and then they fall over. The name of this camp was that of an Arab who stabbed an Israeli soldier last November and was killed in the act. On other occasions, children in these summer camps have acted out how Israeli soldiers plant knives on Arabs, then kill them in cold blood, and then claim that they were attacked by that Arab with a knife. And I ask you, is there any difference between this behavior and the passion play in Germany in the Middle Ages at Oberammergau, in which the Jew is evil incarnate, as the Jews call for and gloat over the torturing to death of Jesus of Nazareth? There is no difference. There is a difference that the Europeans are no longer conceiving of Jews as inhuman creatures of evil. We may remain fascist, racist, fascist, imperialist aggressors, but that's not a uniquely Jewish way to misbehave. Kind of normal, actually, when you think about it. It's still a far cry from being superhuman devils versus the Arabs and the Muslims who continue to conceive of Jews as monsters of sadism and cruelty. Clearly, this is a psychological projection. This is the culture. Theirs is the culture of sadism and cruelty, not ours. These children are being taught to externalize their own aggression and paint the Jews with it. Only absent are the Israeli politicians and other public figures who would point the finger at the Arabs and declare that these people are as bonkers, and arguably even more so, than the Germans were. At the very least, we can say, from top to bottom in Arab society, these people are collectively perverted in their thinking when it comes to Jews. Even the otherwise seemingly civilized King of Amman, Abdullah II, felt the need this week to go public after Sunday's Tisha B'Av visits to the Temple Mount. About 400 Jews went up, protesting this aggression against their holy site, he said. Never expect this king in Jordan to speak the truth, that there was no aggression on Sunday, to tell his people that the accusations are false would be to mark himself for assassination. To defend the Jews when they are accused, forget that. And it isn't. But a whole culture. There are no Arab or Marlene Dietrichs to protest the anti-Semitism in their society and to go into exile. There's not one public figure in Araby who defends little Israel, like the legions of anti-Jew Jews here and around the world who wave the flag of the Palestinians and chastise their own people, as the Goy enemy does. But then again, the word Goy is not used in secular modern Israeli life. How they pride themselves on making Tel Aviv a haven for the sexually outré. The last thing Israelis like this want is to see a wall of separation between Israelis and the other nations. They want to be kechol goyim in Hebrew, like all the nations. Their religion is the vision of Israel as a normal country, and religion has nothing to do with it. And so they remain insensate to the reality of secular Zionism's failure to escape anti-Semitic neighbors. In a way, the Zionist enterprise was jumping from the frying pan into the fire. Here we are on this little patch of estate, 6 million Jews and 2 million others, surrounded on three sides by 550 million Muslim Arabs, Muslim Iranians, Muslim Turks, who look at us and see demons and devils. Of course, Israelis without religion can't deal with this and act as if it wasn't true that these Muslims are crazier in their heads about Jews than the Europeans we left behind.
אשת חיל נמצא, ורחוק מפנינים נכרע. פתח בלב בלב, ושלל לא יחסר. אשת חיל נמצא, חייה דרשת צמר ופשתים בתס בחפץ כפיה. הייתה כאוניות סוחר ממרחק תביא לחמה. אשת חיל נמצא, ורחוק מפנינים נכרע. פתח בלב ושלל לא יחסר. קבע פרסה לעני וידיה שילחה לאביון. לא תראה לביתה משלק, כי כל ביתה לבושנים. מרבדים עשתה לה שש וארגמן לבושה. נודע בשערים בעלה שבתו עם זקני ארץ. אשת חיל נמצא, ורחוק מפנינים נכרע. פתח בלב בלב, ושלל לא יחסר. אשת חיל נמצא, פתחה בחוכמה ותורת חסד הלשונה. צופיה הליכות ביתה ולחם עצלות לא תאכל. קמו בניה וישרוע בעלה ויהללה. רבות בנות עשו חיל ואת עלית על כולנה.
Yes, today's Israelis are products of anti-religious pioneers who believe that if they shed their identity as Jews, as the chosen people, and stopped setting themselves apart, the Gentiles would stop hating them and murdering us all the time. The problem with that, we now know, is that it did not take into account the possibility that while these post-Jews wanted to metamorphose into another kind of nation, the Goyim might not go along. They might not let us. They may have wanted the Chalutzim, the pioneers, to shed their Jewish identity like an old suit, but the Goyim did not agree. First of all, trashing Judaism as they did means trashing Christianity and Islam. If Judaism is the opiate of the masses, according to Karl Marx, the lunatic anti-Semite, or an illusion, according to Sigmund Freud, then so both stepdaughter religions claiming authority where their connection to Judaism are kaput as well. Put another way, a man like Ehud Barak, who grew up in a Mapai commune, the dominant stream in socialist Zionism, where religion was a joke, he would have a hard time understanding the role of religion among the Muslims who surround us. In a word, I don't think he gets it, ever did get it. And it is the same flight from their own people's founding and sustaining ideology called Judaism that cripples Israel in other ways when dealing with these Muslims. For example, the IDF the other night destroyed the home of that mad dog 17-year-old named Muhammad who murdered sweet Halel Yafa Ariel Hashem Yikon Demah, when this is not enough and really quite wrong in destroying inert property. And in any case, most cases, the home in question that gets destroyed is less than the ancestral man's. More commonly, it is a nothing of a place. So now the family has to find another place to live, which it will, and all returns to normal. The Ariel family, though, has made public its desire that the family of the murderer be expelled from the country, and that Israel does not do that, as it used to, is symptomatic of Israel's defective identity as post-Jewish Jews. We also learned of the release of the Arab living in Jerusalem who worked as a cook at Cafe Rimon in Jerusalem, and during the heyday of the last Intifada in 2002, he was planning on poisoning the food at that famous cafe. Well, he spent the last 14 years in prison and was just released, and he returned to his home in an Arab section of Greater Jerusalem, Jabal Mukaber. And when he arrived, neighbors greeted him with smiles and shouts against the state of Israel. This is just intolerable. Israelis are slaves to acting like all the nations and view international law would not permit sending him out of the country. I say nonsense. I remember when the Soviets exiled the anti-communist novelist Alexander Solzhenitsyn and nothing happened to Russia. And last Thursday in Germany, new anti-terror measures kicked in, announced by the Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière. He said German citizens who go abroad, and there have been about 1,000 of them, to fight with ISIS, if they have another national identity, they should lose their German one. Predictably, a Green Party parliamentarian condemned the idea as, quote, desperate activism. For sure, the leftists would howl at such an idea, and they would howl at Israel if it were to return to expelling the worst of these barbarians. But so what? It would be a time to exercise and illustrate to the world that this is our country, our state, and we decide who has the right to live in it and who forfeits that right, regardless of place of birth. I think it's simply outrageous that Israel has liberated this man to return to his home in Jerusalem. By all means, free him from prison. We don't have to pay for his food and lodging anymore. That's good. But then send him out of the country. This monster in training was plotting. He was stopped in time, thank God, to poison the diners in that famous restaurant with poison that would not kick in for like 15 hours. So that having dispersed to the four winds these strangers when they sickened and died, there would be no immediate connection to the others, to Cafe Rimon. A man like this, to my mind, has lost his right to live in our country. I want him out. Him and every other terrorist whose guilt does not demand the death penalty, that's something else Israelis don't want to face because it's become out of fashion among the enlightened, which I think is a huge social mistake. Those who advocate no death penalty, because killing is always wrong in all circumstances, are wrong. Had it been possible to assassinate Hitler the day he took power, that would have been a blessed killing. Nothing wrong with that. So the postulate killing people is wrong under all circumstances is just not true. It posits an inhuman and unnatural ethic. Israel needs a death penalty, needs to expel others, and each time we must proclaim to the world this is our country, and we expel whomever we want to. For sure, the common international ethic is that one born into a country, or born in a certain country, regardless of circumstances, is entitled to citizenship. But that position need not be universal. After all, we just read last Shabbos, the start of Sefer Devarim, Deuteronomy, of the different succession of peoples who lived east of the river, one replacing the other. And that was the people of Israel come to replace the current inhabitants, which was the will of Hashem, whose history is a record of wars between peoples, victors taking spoils, and there's no shame in Israelis proclaiming that all the land west of the river belongs to the state of Israel by law, and Israel has the right to expel enemies who are themselves shameless in saying Israel must be destroyed. Listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. So, I think so much defective Israeli behavior stems from its imperfect relationship to its Jewish identity, leastwise, among the chattering classes in journalism and politics here. The villainous Dr. Matt Indyk advised John Kerry to threaten Israel being branded an apartheid state, because Indyk knows how much Israelis crave being told they are normal and not alone in the world. Israelis are determined not to be denied a place among the nations, the title of Netanyahu's book, and not surprisingly, one ambassador to the UN in recent years was almost in tears when relating how alone she felt in that organization. Versus yours truly, a proud citizen of the State of Israel, but by upbringing not an Israeli, a Jew and an American, who delights in such tales, for they confirm the biblical prophecy of a Gentile prophet who said, "We will be a people that dwells alone." And in any case, so many of the countries represented at the UN who will give us the cold shoulder are peoples whose affection I do not crave. Take the case of what's going on at Susia in the South Hebron Hills. Shabbat, some 300 anti-Jews went to the squatter encampment of Arabs there outside the Jewish settlement and the preserved, restored ancient synagogue. These enemies of the Jewish people believe the land under their squatter's camp has been theirs from time immemorial, and that the Jews now want to steal from them. There's not one scrap of evidence for this. On the contrary, all the evidence, such as aerial photos of the site from years ago, show a barren patch of ground. No ancient Palestinians living on it at the time. But Susia has now become a cause célèbre, driving foreign governments to demand that Israel refrain from what? From doing what the French government did to gypsies squatting on land they had no legal right to? To do what any owner of land has the right to do to illegal squatters. Only in this case, enemy NGOs funded by anti-Semitic Jews and goyim abroad have stormed to the rescue and defense. Foreign governments, too, all of them declaring that Israel will be a criminal state if it dislodges these ancient Palestinians from their ancient ancestral sod. Again, Israel is torn between being loved and respected abroad and exercising its sovereign rights to this land. Israel does not dictate to the UK or to France or Spain how to govern inside its borders in such common land disputes, and they must be told to butt out. What's going on here is the Gentile inability to respect the right of the Jewish people to be sovereign in our own ancient homeland that we brought back to life with our money, our blood, our tears, and sweat. The world cannot accept that we have returned to our ancient promised land, brought it back to life, and it's ours. In the exile, Gentiles told us where we could and could not live. In France before the revolution, a Jew traveling from one town to another had to, on arrival, report to the police station and ask for permission to remain. My own grandmother, a blessed memory, like all other Jews in the Pale of Settlement, could not travel to Moscow without a special police visa. Israel has to firmly respond to its critics and say that it believes they are less concerned for the phantom Palestinians invented last century than the opportunity to continue bashing Jews and telling us where we can and cannot live. I'm afraid too many goyim have yet to accept that we are the owners of the Holy Land, once again, rightfully and morally, ours. And in the matter of land rights in Judea, at Susia, we are the law. And Israel's highest court has ruled, even these left panel, that the case is clear. These are squatters who have no right to camp where they are, and they must go. Thank you. Okay, that's it for this first night back from the 3 weeks. We'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.